If you have a chumash, if you have the blue chumashim, it's on page 41, and this is a hashkafah shir. You know, some of my shirim are much more parsha oriented, and we want to understand the psukim and the language of the psukim. This particular shir today is much more hashkafah, and there's one main point here which will give us an appreciation of the entire gamut of responsibilities incumbent on mankind. That means even Bnei Noach on the one hand, and it'll also give us an appreciation for the choice of letters in the Torah. Not just words in the Torah, but even the letters that make up. So if you have the Chumash on page 41, you'll see Psukim, Chaf Hei and Chaf Vav.
Is it there?
So again, I ask everyone to please bring in a blue chumash, only because it saves me time and we're very pressed for time. So this is what the blue chumash looks like. So if you don't have a blue chumash, I should really do it myself and bring in the blue chumash for you, but I just wish you were mature enough to, as I make this announcement twice a week, to please bring a blue chumash. But if you don't have a blue chumash, so it's Precious Yutes, Pasuk Chaf Hei. Vayafoch. Okay, that's all I need is that one word, vayafoch. So you should underline it at least mentally. I'm not going to allow you to make a correction on the chumash unless it's your own chumash. And then if you take a look at Pasuk Chavav, we're gonna read that Pasuk. Vatabet ishto me'acharav, vatehi netziv melach. So you're going to underline the word melach. So you have two words to underline here, so to speak. The word lafoch, and the word melech. Now, today's discussion will revolve around a Gemara in Masechta Brachos. And I got it in Masechta Brachos. And this is on Daf Nun Dalet Amud Beis, and it's the first source on your page. The Gemara says the following. Tni, we learned in a Braisa. Now, this perek in Masechta Brachos deals with what's called Birchas HaShevach Vodoya. When a person has a certain occasion for which he should give thanksgiving to Hashem, he beholds something very unusual, he's obligated in a brach, and Chazal formulated various brachas for various occasions. Jeremy, are you up to this in brachas now? What daf you up to in Masechta Brachos?
No.
Do you remember?
Yeah, not as far as...
You didn't get this far. Okay, so it's a little bit of a preview of coming attractions. So the case is a man sees alot v'al ishto. Now he sees the place in Stom where Ashes Lot turned into a pillar of salt and where Lot was saved. And back in the day they actually knew exactly where that was located. Today we more or less know the general location, but I don't know if we can pinpoint the place. So this brach that we're about to learn about has sort of fallen out of use. But back in the day, the Braisa mandates that we make not one bracha, but two brachas. One bracha for Ashes Lot, and one bracha for Lot. Shtayim, Mevarchim Shtayim. Al Ishto Omer, what bracha is appropriate for this pillar of salt? Baruch Dayan HaEmes. Now that bracha is usually recited when we find out about Nebuch.
So
the death of someone, correct? And here, when you look at the pillar of salt, presumably you imagine in your mind, you know, her body when she was alive, and now she's a pillar of salt, so she, you know, you're reminded of her death. And in that association, Baruch Dayana Emes. Again, this will all become clearer as we go along. V'alot, what bracha, this is more curious, but what bracha should a person make over Lot? I mean, he survived it. Ah, but he survived the destruction of Lot miraculously, so that also requires a bracha.
Even though, his wife disobeyed Hashem.
Right. We're going to, you know, Yaakov, give me just a few minutes, if you don't mind, just to get moving, because, again, I have a lot to cover in a very short period of time. So, asking your mechila, so what bracha should a person recite on the place where Lot was saved? And it says there, Omer, Baruch, and Baruch is just the beginning of the bracha. You can fill in the next part of the bracha, and it ends, Zocher es hatzadikim. that God remembers the tzaddikim, and we together with God are remembering the tzaddik. Now, which tzaddik lechor are we talking about here?
It must be Lot.
It must be Lot. And that's the Lavush. The Lavush lived 5 centuries ago. There's a street named after him in Yerushalayim called the Lavush Mordechai. His name was Mordechai Yaffa. And he wrote a Shulchan Aruch, but the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Kair beat him out. They were both writing at the same time, but the Shulchan Aruch was able to publish his before the Lavush was able to publish his. That's why nobody knows about the Lavush Mordechai, except for the great scholars. But truth be told, that was meant in the original plan to be the Shulchan Aruch. Anyway, he writes the following. This is an Aruch Chaim Siman Reish and Ches, which is the Siman dedicated to the Brachos. Haroa ishto shalot mevarch shtayim b'tchila kisharoa osa mevarch miyad ole baruch ato Hashem elkeinim el cholom dayon ha'emes. The agav sharoa osa, now this is interesting, he doesn't say the way I said it, that you pass the place where Lot was saved, but just the very fact that you see the pillar of salt, that reminds you of what? Not just of Ashes Lot, but also of Lot himself. And Agav, now, by, that you see the pillar of salt, you remember also her husband Lot. And then, Shehaya Tzadik. So if you can, if you have a pen, please underline those two words. If you don't have a pen, you can borrow mine, but only on the condition that you return it to me. Because people take my pen and then I don't see it. Okay? So it says, Shehaya Tzadik. Clearly the Lavush understands that who's the tzaddik here that we're blessing God about? Yeah. Lot, no question about it. The Kevan Shezokro Yivarech Olav. Whenever you mention a tzaddik and you remember a tzaddik, then you make a bracha. And therefore the bracha is Baruch Atah Hashem Elkeinu Melech Olam Zocher HaTzaddikin. Now the super commentary on the Lavush is called the Eliyahu Rabbah. I happen to be the proud owner of a copy of the Eliyahu Rabbah. I mean the original. I almost bought the original of the Lavush Mordechai, but I got outbid, so I couldn't afford it. It was way beyond my capabilities. But I did get a volume of the Lavush Mordechai that was sold by the Bar Ilan University Library when they moved from one place to the other. It was published in Prague approximately 3 centuries ago. So I'm the proud owner of that. So I'm proud about that. Anyway, the super commentary on the Lavush is the Eliyahu Rabbah. Generally speaking, he tries to embellish the Lavush. On various occasions, he argues with the Lavush. And that's one of the occasions that we have here. So on the two words that I asked you to underline in the Lavush, Ahayat Tzadik, he writes Tema. This makes no sense. How is it possible for the Lavush to have missed a Rashi in Chumash? And Rashi in his commentary on Chumash in Parshas Lech Lecha writes, "Vashem Amar Avram Achrei He Pared Lot Mi Imo." That God spoke to Avram after Lot checked out. You remember they separated back in Parshas Lech Lecha. Lot went his way towards what? Help me out here, Rabosai. Towards Sdom, right? And Avram was gravitating towards El Elyon Mamre and those places. Calls man. Why did Hashem appear to Avram Avinu after Lot checked out? You remember this? George, why did Hashem appear to Avram? I'm testing you. You don't mind? This is a chutzpah on my part, but I'm talking to him like I talk to my 18-year-old students. Right? So why did Hashem appear to Avram after Lot checked out? Why did Hashem wait until then? Was Lot a good guy or a bad guy? He was a bad guy. Rashi calls him a rasha. Calls man sharasha ima yadavir porish menu. Avram Avinu, his relationship chummy with Lot, suffered a lot. He really paid the price. He lost the shechina, the deeper of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all those years that Lot was with him. When Lot checked out, then Hashem appears to Avram. And not only that, Rashi in Parshas Vayera also says, al tabid acharecha, ata hirshata imahem. Interesting. Lot, you are also enjoined from looking back. Don't think you're the great tzaddik, because you're a rasha like the members of stone. And therefore, the only reason God says I'm going to save you is bischus Avram ata nitzol. So who's the tzaddik here? Avram, not Lot. And that's clear from two Rashis. In both occasions, Rashi consistently describes Lot as a Rasha. And the Lavush, who lived about 500 years after Rashi, calls Lot a Tzaddik and says that they established a Bracha, Zocher HaTzaddikim, because of Lot. How do we understand this? So he says, "V'nira dalavush haven abrocha shom zochet zim koi alot v'lachein nafal b'toz." A big mistake on the part of the lavush. Avolo ien b'pirish Rashi b'reish perik haroa. Lavush missed a Rashi on the Gemara itself that we're learning in Perik Haroa Nudalit. Rashi says, "Koy al Avram." That when we recite the bracha Zocher Sad Tzadikim, which tzaddik do we have in mind? Mm-hmm. Not Lot but Avram, because Lot was saved only because of his uncle, right? Only b'schus dem feta, you know, Avram Avinu. Otherwise, he on his own, Lot had no merits. He was a rasha. So that, again, the accusation here is very harsh against the Levush. Not only did the Levush miss up on two Rashis and Chumash, that's bad enough, but even on the Gemara itself, which he is codifying, he missed Rashi. And he says that the Vehu Tzadik is, Shahayat Tzadik is a reference to Lot. So we want to ask a few questions here. Question number one is, how could the Levush have made this mistake? What did Lavush really mean? Come on, give it a break. Do you really think the Lavush meant that Lot was a tzaddik and make a bracha on? Come on. There must be a deeper meaning to what the Lavush is saying. And secondly, why do we say the bracha zocher ha-tzaddikim in the Hebrew grammatical plural? If the Lavush is right, then we should say zocher ha-tzaddik in reference to Lot. If, on the other hand, we accept the pshat of Rashi, as the Elio Rabba insists, then it should have said in the bracha, Zocher HaTzadik, referring to Avram Avinu. So either way, we have a problem here. The Nusach HaBracha, why they establish the Nusach HaBracha in the plural, Tzadikim. And furthermore, the Mishnah Brura asks in Simon Reish Yud Ches, why do we make a bracha on Eishes Lot, Baruch Dayan HaEmes? Now wait a second. A person who goes through, let's say, an avil, Rachmana Litzlan, loses one of their relatives, they're in a state of what? Of anguish, correct? So in order to indicate that despite their anguish, they don't lose faith in God, they're obligated to make a bracha, Baruch Dayan HaEmes. But is anyone here in this room in anguish because Eishes Lot had gestarven, because she died? If you're in anguish over that, I'm going to ask you to leave right now. We have no empathy whatsoever. Sheishes Lot, I can go on here for an hour and tell you what a she was. Okay, I won't say that out loud, although it's a female dog in the dictionary. So that's Sheishes Lot. So we were Baruch Dayan HaEmes. God, you know, despite the anguish and the despair, and we're in grief and mourning, you're a great judge. What do you mean you're a great judge? Make a bracha because of Sheishes Lot. So I both say, in order to analyze these questions, we're going to go back to basics. Why did God destroy stone? And what philosophical lesson do we have to derive from that divine decision? The pasuk in Yechezkel, Anovi, addresses this in a very strange way. And this is in Perek Tezayin in Yechezkel. There are a number of chapters in Yechezkel which are very critical to understand the Moed HaShana, the festivals in the Jewish calendar year, to understand various episodes in Tanakh. One of them is Tes Zayin, which addresses the chet of stone, the sin of stone. And look what it says. Hine zeh hoya avon stom achoscha. It's very strange here that the Navi, in his harsh castigation of the people of Israel for their sins, considers them guilty like stone, like we're a sister of stone. Okay, that's for a different shiur. But in any event, what is the Avon Stom? Yechezkel asks that question. And the answer he gives is, Yad Ani V'Evyon Lo Echzika. A poor person who's destitute comes knocking at your door, and instead of opening your door and offering them some tzedakah, some financial help, you close the door in their face, you couldn't care less, and you have not fulfilled the great mitzvah of tzedakah. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Matnas Aniyim about the greatness of the mitzvah of tzedakah. It's the key that distinguishes the Jewish nation from the other nations, and we give tzedakah, and we feel for the ani. And the Rambam says that the tzedakah reaches under the kisei hakavod. The Rambam goes on and on and on to describe the great mitzvah of tzedakah. And here, guess what, buddies? You know what Stone is guilty of? You know why they're going to be destroyed? Because they didn't fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah. Now wait a second, Rabbosai. How many mitzvahs does a Ben Noach have?
No.
Only seven. Are you adding an eighth here? We don't know that Stucker is on the list. I checked the list, by the way. I did not find Stucker. You're going to have to trust me on this one. Says Rabbeinu Bachai, I don't get it. Why is stone being judged to destruction because of Stucker? And the answer he gives is Lefisha Hayu Tidirim Bechet Hazeh. There's one sin where you occasionally fall prey, you know, the evil klesh gets the best of you, but here they were consistent. And that's called Tadir. Lekach Nigmar Dinam Gzar Dinam Olav. Sharei Ein Lecha Uma Ba'olam. You'll ask me, but wait a minute, the mitzvah of tzedakah is not listed in the seven, but there's no nation Shlo Yasu Tzedakah Elu El Elu. The Rabbeinu Bachai is implying that maybe there's something meta Zion mitzvahs, if you know what I mean, beyond the Zion mitzvahs. There's no nation on the earth that won't do tzedakah one for another member of the other nation. Okay, we're not saying that the Achi Stom should have gone around kissing every ani from every nation and just throwing out flour and bestowing, showering gifts on every, but at least amongst themselves. Achi Stom hayu moasim, but they hated tzedakah. It was legislated against their law. They represent the ultimate in cruelty. The Afal Pishin Ol Nosna Torah Dayin. Nobody had mitzvahs yet. This was all before the Matan Torah. But Hine, he says, you should behold that at Stokum in a mitzvos hamuskolos. Rabbi said, what does muskolos mean? Rational, logical, excellent. So you don't have to wait till Matan Torah. There's certain mitzvahs, says the Rabbeinu Bachai, that we understand intuitively based on human logic and rational law. There was a German philosopher named Immanuel Kant. Did you ever hear of him?
Yeah.
He lived in the 18th and the beginning of the 19th century. He wrote an entire treatise on morality, on the philosophy of morality, in which he tries to prove what's called a categorical imperative, that there's certain rules that absolutely must be accepted by every nation, otherwise it undermines the entire society. Who mituav who? This is absolutely repulsive. Shiyira Adames Mino. He sees a member of his own people. Mutav Barav, he's dying of starvation. He's wallowing in his starvation. Vahu Ashir Visavan, he's wealthy and satiated. Mikol Tuvi has everything. Vieno Marachim Olav Lahashivis Nafsho. He has no compassion to save his fellow member of his fellow nation, his citizen. Is Alachas Kamva Kamamisha Meumasa Vidar Imo Birachas. And imagine not only is he a member of your Ummah, of your nation, but he lives with you in the same city. And yet you feel no compassion. It's repulsive, the whole concept of helping someone who's dying and giving him stuck, extending charity, is repulsive. Al Kain, therefore, Avdon Hashem Yisrael Anshei Stom. Anshei Stom had to be put to death, to destruction. Hayumonim Osa, they would prevent anyone from giving tzedakah. And Velokach Nikmas Hanim, God avenged the poor people because they were so cruelly mistreated by Anshei Stom. And here, my friends, we see some basic principle which we want to expand upon. There's a Torah as we know it. There's the Torah of 613 given in Har Sinai. There's another Torah given to Bnei Noach of seven mitzvahs. But there's something that comes before the Torah. It's even more fundamental than the Torah. It's a moral rule. It's an ethical behavior that's demanded of a person's called muskolos, and it predates the Torah. And it is so far-reaching and fundamental that it might lead to the destruction, the ultimate gzardin of an entire people. And this, I think, is embellished by Reb Chaim Vital. Does anybody know who his Rebbe was, Reb Chaim Vital? He lived five centuries ago, up north. The Arizal, you heard of the Arizal? If not, you should go up there and take a look. You go to the kever of the Arizal, right next door, you'll see the kever of all his great disciples. Of course, the greatest was Reb Chaim Vital. And he wrote the Sharak Dusha. And in the Sharak Dusha, he writes, and again, we're not going to have time to read every word inside, but please, if you can, follow it with your eyes inside. There's something called Midos. Midos are the natural attributes that God bestows upon the Nefesh HaAdam, the soul of man. And this is so fundamental, he says, that the Nefesh itself, in order to thrive, is dependent upon these good midos. And then there's something called midos ros. When a person violates these good midos that he was granted, he was bestowed upon him by Hashem, and he writes the shoresh, the root of the soul of man on the highest level, are the logical mitzvahs, the moral mitzvahs that are rational. And then we have the Tarayag mitzvahs and the seven mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. That's all post. But the fundamentals, he says, Ein amidos mechlal atarayag mitzvahs. You won't find anywhere in the Torah where the Torah commands you to behave according to these great attributes, to implement those attributes. But they are the hachanos. They are the precursor and the introduction, the prologue to the Tarayag mitzvahs. And all of Tarayag mitzvahs as an entity depends upon these midos. And therefore the inyan of midos is not written in the Torah, because the Torah doesn't write the fundamentals. For example, nowhere does the Torah command you to believe in God. And that's the fundamental of all the mitzvahs. In fact, the Bahag doesn't even count belief in God as one of the 613, because that's too fundamental. So to the midos, according to the Arizal, to be a good guy in terms of your behavior are so fundamental that it's not even listed in the Torah. It's pre-Torah. And therefore, we understand that kolakoes, if a person gets angry, is ki'ilu oved avodazora. It's like he's an idol worshiper. Why? It's shkula keneged tarayag mitzvahs. Because anger, as a bad midah, is as weighty as the 613. Where does it say in the Torah, thou shalt not get angry? I looked for it, I didn't find it, but the answer is, it's midos. And when it comes on the midos, it's even more fundamental than the mitzvos. There's midos and then mitzvos. The mitzvos come later. They're built on the premise of midos. The mitzvos are built on midos. V'nimtza, therefore, comes out. You have to be more careful in midos to avoid any sort of midos rose, even more than the kiyuma mitzvos of the essays and the lotases. If he's a baal midos tovos, then it's easy for him to do the mitzvos. And Rabbo said, this is a very heavy hashkof over here. I'm afraid to even say these words, how fundamental this is. But that's the opinion of Reb Chaim Vital. And you know that up until the Nazis, you know, we had a gadol by the name of Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman. He was killed by the Nazis. And he wrote a biur, an explanation on our gadolos. We only have a fraction of it. I mean, he could have revolutionized our whole understanding of the Agadita if he would have survived. But and he writes in his Bir on Agadita, based on this pasuk in Yechezkel, that the punishment of stone was because they didn't support the poor people. He says that's not called a bittul mitzvah's essay, because we don't find anywhere that the mitzvah of tzedakah was given to the Ben Noach. It's certainly not included in the seven mitzvahs Bnei Noach. So why then would the stone destruction would have been finalized in God's decree because of tzedakah, as Yechezkel Hanavi says, when tzedakah is not even one of the mitzvahs that's incumbent on Ben Noach? Says Rebbe Elchanan, in order to understand this, you have to look into Reb Chaim Vital in Shari Kedusha. Reb Chaim Vital does not address the case of stone, but if we apply his logic and his fundamental principles to the case of stone, we can explain the pasuk in Yechezkel and the reason why stone was destroyed and what the sin was. The answer is, even though we don't find in the Torah any azhar, any warning enjoining us from midos ros, but nevertheless, midos ros is the yesod. It's the it's the foundation upon which the entire Torah is predicated, is built. Who built Tosama without the midos tovos, lo yitzur klal kiyuma Torah. There's no way of fulfilling the Torah. The Torah didn't even have to mention the midos tovos. That's understood. And therefore, even with regard to the Bnei Noach, it's understood. And now you look on the top left, if you can. And he says that Anshei Stom, they are the epitome They are the personification of midos achzorios, of cruelty, as we saw before in Rabbeinu Bachai. I mean, how can you see someone who's dying of starvation? You don't want to lend him a hand, and you're rich and you're wealthy. You have all this food to give him. Al kein nenshu al midos and arah. They were destroyed because of their midarah. Even though, again, there was no mitzvah of midarah. In fact, there was no mitzvah at all. It was before our Sinai. Ilun itztava mitzvahs hayu nenashim. Even if they were to be punished because of a violation of a mitzvah, so you know what? A person could violate a mitzvah once in his lifetime, maybe twice, and so forth and so on. But you're not going to put such a person to death as a sinner. But now, what we're talking about is midos ros. Midos ros, when they get to that level of being so cruel, that being punished not for the bittul essay of tzedakah, they don't even have the essay of tzedakah, but rather for the violation and the desecration of midos tovos. They represent the personification of midos ros. The al midos ros, nigzra dinam, they were subject to destruction. And we could take this perhaps one step further. You know, Rabbeinu Yonah, who lived 1,000 years ago in Spain, authored a book, a commentary on Pirkei Avos. And in the 5th perek, the Mishnah describes a mead of stone. And the Mishnah presents a controversy about the following situation. A person who declares, Shali shali v'shalcha shalcha. What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. So I'm not going to put my hand into your pocket and take what's yours, but I'm not going to share what's mine with you. What's mine is mine. So according to the Tanna Kamma, the first Tanna in the Mishnah, Zo Mida Beinonis, that's your average person. In other words, he doesn't care necessarily to extend himself on your behalf, correct? But he doesn't want to take gifts from you. He's self-sufficient, he's Shali Shali, and you be self-sufficient as well. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, I understand the Yesh Omrim in that Mishnah, Zu Midas Stom. Why? And he says on the second line, Kosha Eich Yomer Shezu Midas Beinonis, a person who's not willing to help with his own wherewithal, his own possessions to someone else, Monea Atzmo Litein Staka, and he refuses to extend himself and give charity to others, Rasha Gomoru. He's an absolute Rasha. He represents Midas Dom. How can you call it a Midas Beinonis? I understand very well it's a Midas Dom because the Pasuk in Yechezkel says that the Avon, the sin for which Dom was condemned to death, was Ani Yad Ani V'Evyon Lo Ichzika. They did not fulfill Tztaka. So how could it be that there's a Tana? The first time in this Mishnah would say it's a Midas Beinonis, you know, it's your average person. What's your average person is a stomite? Ella says, so the Rabbeinu Yonah is so hard pressed by this that he has to reinterpret the Mishnah. Hacha Mayri Benosein Tztaka. We're talking about a person who is willing to give Tztaka, but begrudgingly. He doesn't give it Bitivo Kili in his heart. He's cruel. He really doesn't want to give tztaka. But he gives tztaka because he's afraid of the repercussions if he doesn't give tztaka. You know, I'm imagining in my mind a meeting that I had some years ago with a CEO of a very important corporation. I think they sold the corporation for $27 million. Anyway, when I was in his office, he turns his computer towards me and he shows me a list of all the tzedakahs that his corporation gives for this art museum and for this hospital, you know, the Catholic, whatever. Not one Jewish cause. And he was boasting to me. Now, the truth is, off the records, that the reason these companies give tzedakah is for not only for tax reasons, they get political influence in the city. This was one of the smaller towns in the state of Ohio. And this CEO, whom I sat with, he didn't say these words, but I understood it, that when he gives to the to this department and this organization, he gets credit for that. He gets political power for that. And that could influence on the success of his corporation in many, many different ways. Inside, a person could be extremely cruel and callous. He couldn't care less about giving tzedakah. When he has to give to a really good cause, other than the ASPCA, that's to help the animals, the stray animals, you know, then right away he thought, oh, there's no money, I can't, all of a sudden, you know, he's got money for every single cause. I remember reading once the New York Times an obituary about a woman, very wealthy woman, and she died childless, and she left her entire possessions to her dog. Maybe it was a cat. I don't know, it was many years ago. Catamon. Maybe it was a dog. I don't know what it was. I'm saying people give tzedakah all sorts of crazy things because they have no seichel. Worse than that, they're stomites. They have no feeling for anybody. But at least they give tzedakah, says Rabbi Yonah, and therefore you could call it mida beinonis, meaning your average Joe, even if he gives tzedakah, he's motivated by reasons X, Y, and Z. He's not giving it because he feels for the cause. He's total inside. He's totally heartless, and therefore you could call it mida beinonis. But in the case of Midas Tom, he says, Sharsho Rama Ot. There, it's not just an occasional kind of callousness, but the callousness became embedded in their very personality. We spoke about this last week, if you remember. Says Rav Dessler in the Michta Melio, that if you take a look at the story of the battles of Avram with the various Malachim, and you go through the entire history of it, he says the fact in Nabit be'ayin chodesh, if you look meticulously at the psukim and the history, he says that Avraham Avinu was willing to put his life on the line. Masar nafshel atzilo me'arba malachim shayu chazokim. He says that these four kings were very powerful and they were giants and so forth. They could defeat the other kings, including the king of stone. And Kfarhiku is Kulam Kodam Shiyotsu Malchi Stone Valmoral across them. They defeated the entire world, and now the ones who are left are the Stomites and Amora, Stom and Amora. They go out to battle against them. And Avraham Avinu really saves Stom at that point. Again, you have to go through the whole history here. Says Rav Elio Dessler, Navin Vinabit Biain Choderet Shamelech Stomay Mishulal Mikol Midos Atobos. You'll see that the king of Stom is completely excluded from any good midos. How do we see this? Hayalola melech lahodos, the king of Stom should have come out with a seven-piece band and with all the singers in the world to sing the lofty praises of Avraham Avinu who saved them from these four kingships. L'moshiu al Berkov, he should come out on his knees and lechamko and kiss him and hug him. And what do we find? Nothing. Malchitzedek, who's the son of Ben Noach, he's older than Avraham Avinu, he was not attacked by the kingships, and yet he comes out to give a bracha to Avraham Avinu. But what does the Melech Stom say? Ah, he's in a business mode. Tein li es hanefesh, let's make a barter deal of Arachush Kachloch. In other words, Mitzad Adin, even though Avraham Avinu really owned all the nefesh, that's called kibush melchama, but nevertheless, please, I'm going to make you a deal. Give me the nefesh. Does he say a word about Avraham Avinu? You saved my skin. You saved my people. Hayim zu aderech. This is the way a king should act. Liftoach bidot ledaber lemish aslo tova gedola vinora kihatsilo meivadon b'mesirus nefesh. That's the first thing you have to say to someone who put his life on the line to save you from destruction. Nikeres Khan, we could already appreciate Midas Dom, the Kfias Hatov Hamukhletes. A total and absolute ingrate. Right? Is that the word in English? The opposite of a Baal Midas Hakaras Hatov is called, I think, in English, an ingrate. And that's what Melech Sdom personifies. And now, Rabosai, I want to quote to you something in the name of the Sakaj of a Rebbe. His name was the Avnei Nezer, his son was the Shem Yishmuel. And he quotes his father, who says that Al Kein Hoya Onish Sdom Behaficha. Again, you remember the word Vayahafach. Who remembers that? The destruction of Sdom was haficha. God, so to speak, turned the whole city inside out. What does it mean, haficha? What's the significance of that word? He says, Kya olam chesed yibane. The entire world is predicated and created on chesed, on kindness and benevolence. Ve chesed omar yivra you remember the Medrash that says that when God was trying to decide whether to create the world or not create the world, justice said, no, man is full of lies, don't create him, he's not just, he's not honest. And Chesed came to say, no, he does Chesed, it's worth creating man. The whole world was created bizchus the Chesed. Vehem? And what about stone? Lo dai shelo asu Chesed. Not bad enough they didn't do any Chesed for anybody. But it was worse than it. Eleheru od la'anosh esa'osa chesed. There was a legislation that if somebody does chesed in staka, he will be punished. Terrible punishments. So they punish someone who did chesed. That's called hepuch. Why is that called hepuch?
It's a reversal.
It's a reversal of the creation of the world. And therefore, their destruction will be appropriate, because if they want to undermine chesed and punish for chesed, they're really undermining the entire world. They will be destroyed. Haficha, the opposite of creation is destruction. A beautiful insight. And if you're able to turn your page a little bit onto its side, you will see a Yalkut Ruveni, which is a kind of a collection of Midrashi Chazal. And on the pasuk, Vatabet Ishto Me'achora Vatehi Nitziv Melach. What was the word I asked you to underline? Melach. What's melach?
Salt.
Salt. Now take a look at the letters of the word melach. And he says the following. He says, Masha Eshes Lot melach. Why was she converted into salt? Melach. Lomanikres melach. Shahoyu aniyim evakshim lechem. The poor people were asking for lechem. What do you notice about the three letters that make up the word lechem? Same three letters as melach. Okay, you knew about this, George. No? If you did know about it, you probably didn't realize that it comes from the Yalkut Ruveni. That's an early source. Vino senes le melach. They came to ask for what? For compassion. What's compassion here in this context? Lechem, lamed ches mem. And instead of giving them compassion, she gave them melach, which is the same three letters in a different sequence. Lo hayol lasa staka ki melach. She doesn't want to give them staka. She wants to give them melach. Melach is salty. You know, that makes you thirsty. You know, eat that. That wouldn't help them at all. It only make it worse for them. So what happens in the aftermath of this whole sequence of episodes between Ashes Lod and the Aniyim, the poor people? Says the Yalkut Ruvenu, his follow Hashem. You know, those who are destroyed tend to pray to God for revenge against those who destroy them. So these people, these poor people, they pray to Hashem, lachzira letel melach, to convert her back into salt, because she gave them salt, she deserves to be salt. Hashem shomat filosam, again the word haficha, God heard and hearkened to their prayers and converted her into melach. And therefore, the tefillos were accepted. Vatehi nitziv melach. The melach here represents kavana l'ra, midos ros, to violate the most basic human attribute of compassion. Feel for someone who's out and you know, dying from starvation. No, instead she's going to feed the aniyim melach to get rid of them. And if you take a look now at number 14, you will see that Rabbeinu Ephraim, who's one of the Rishonim and wrote a Pirush on the Torah, says that not only are the letters of the word Lechem the identical words as Melach, but he says moreover, the word Melach is the same three letters as the word Chamal, Chet Mem Lamet. Do you see how Melach? If you look at the Chet of Melach and you put it at the beginning, and then you take the mem, which is at the beginning, and put it second, and then the lamed third, you end up with the word chamal. Does anybody know what the word chamal means? Chemla. Is what?
Pity.
Pity, compassion, correct. She takes the word chamal and turns it again, la haficha, the other way around. From chamal, it becomes melach. From rachmanus, it becomes achzorius, absolute cruelty. So the Ashes Lod is the exact opposite, the antithesis of Rachmanus. And therefore from Chamal, she becomes Melach, Vatehi Nitziv Melach. Now, if I want to invite you to my Seuda, let's say you're a poor person, and that's a big mitzvah the whole year round, but certainly on Purim, you know, and Avraham Avinu is the personification of Chesed, So when he invites someone in for the Suda, what's the pasuk going to tell me? Vekha pas, what's the next word? Lechem. Avraham Avinu is lechem. He's exact opposite of Melach. And therefore, when Hashem saves Lot, and we'll soon see why Hashem saves Lot, the pasuk says, let's look it up inside, Perek Yutes, pasuk Tes Zayin, it's a little bit earlier, in the same chapter, it says here that Hashem saves Lot, Bechemlas Hashem Olav. The word is Chemla. Obviously when it's conjugated, you add the tough at the end, but the real word is Chet Mem Lam. So the chemla of Avraham Avinu is in the lechem that he serves to the Archim out of Tztaka, and that chemla is going to be extended to Lot in saving Lot miraculously from the haficha, because lechem became melach of stone, and the haficha of what's her name, Ashes Lot, from lechem to melach, vatehi nitziv Melach, and now all the words of the Torah are beginning to shine and fit into place. And not only that, with what we see in Ashes Lot, and we sense it, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just went in his meeting out of justice, in this case to destroy Ashes Lot. It's what we call Mida Keneged Mida. Now let's talk for a minute about Mida Keneged Mida. Does anybody know how to translate that into English?
Measure for measure.
Measure for measure. Excellent. In other words, God is not just going to punish a person, but the punishment fits the crime. And here we're going to see the Mida Keneged Mida. The onesh is meduyak mamish. It's perfect. It's absolutely on target. Why? Because she was guilty of feeding the aniyim melach, and therefore she would be turned into melach. She sinned with salt, she gets converted into salt. That's mind-boggling. And therefore we come back to square one. The Gemara in Brachos in Perek HaRoah says that when you see Ashes Lot, right, you see the pillar of salt, what bracha should you recite?
Baruch Tayin.
Baruch Tayin Emes. So we thought Baruch Tayin Emes means that we justify God, even though we're in anguish and we're suffering and we're in grief and mourning over the destruction, the loss of someone. No, we couldn't care less. We're actually dancing in the air because she was destroyed. I don't want to say it. I mean, the only person I hate more than Ashes Lot is Zeresh. You remember Zeresh?
Yes.
You know, people stamp for Haman. I'm not interested in stamping for Haman so much as for Zeresh. She was the worst, the lowest of the low. In any event, I don't think that Vashti was much better, but that's a different story. When we get to Purim, we can analyze that. So what do we see in the Midah Keneged Midah, Rabosai? If you read the Baruch Dayana Emes, let's go back to the first source. Which word are you gonna underline now, Rabosai? Because I always like to underline the main word, to highlight the main word. Emes. Emes, truth. God is the God of truth. He's going to mete out justice with absolute truth. Emes and Yoshar. And now, Rabosai, I want to share with you an insight of Reb Tzadik HaKohen, which you'll see on the bottom of your page. And Reb Tzadik speaks about the Hachnosis Archim of Lot. You may remember that the Malachim came to the city of Stone, and Lot took them inside his house, which was a tremendous violation of the legislation of Stone. And he made a mishta, he gave him a banquet, similar to which other person who gave a banquet for the Malachim?
Avram,
okay. And according to Reb Tzadik, he says, why is this mentioned in the Torah? Why is it so critical to understand that Lot also fulfilled Hachnasas Orchim? He says, Al Yidei Zahaya Hatzalaso, this is a key to understand, to unlock the mystery. Why did Lot, who was a Rasha, as we saw in two Rashis, why did he deserve to be spared and miraculously saved from the destruction of stone? He says, Kol Hatzala Bischus Acher. He says it really wasn't that Lot had he racked up the brownie points and deserved with his own merit to be saved. He was a Rasha. But nevertheless, Bischus Acher. Sometimes a person could be spared not in his own personal merit, but in the merit of someone else. But Reb Tzadik says it's not so simple. You don't just snap your finger and say, well, you'll be spared when you deserve to be Hashem destroyed because of so and so. That's not a simple law within the laws, the regulations that govern divine judgment, the regulations of Din U'Mishpat. But he says the following. Ein ha-kavona b'schus shel zeh levad, af sha'allah ein lo shum shaychus l'tzad ha-schus. You can't save Reuven in the schus of Shimon when Reuven has zero schuyot and Shimon has schuyot, because why does Reuven have a right to claim spare me because of Yenam, because of Shimon? Oh no, 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 that's not how it works. Rak Sheshuso Meir Lizakeh Gametz Hanitzol. It's somehow you have, he envisions in this symbolism a massive source of light, and that light sometimes reflects itself in a smaller light, you know, less profound illumination. He says that Avraham Avinu is the Meir, he's the great luminary of Chesed and Atzolas. But that light can somehow purify somebody else, if that somebody else is able to at least pick up at least a reflection, a fraction of that light. If Shimon rubs shoulders with Reuven, and somehow Reuven's greatness rubs off on Shimon, and Shimon also is impacted, you know, by contagion with this midah, in this case, Hachnas Arachim. So it's Lot who rubs shoulders with Avram, and he observes Avram, and he sees what a great Machnas Arachim is Avram, and somehow Lot is influenced and inspired by this, tries to imitate his uncle Avram. So now, since Lot gets a little bit of this chus, albeit not the original, but some sort of a reflection of the original chus, now the original Avraham Avinu can be the mayor who somehow uplifts, inspires, and illuminates, purifies Lot in his midah of Achnosis Orchim. The Lot, Hoyelos chus Avraham, Hainu Fishu Ktsas, Kolat Ktsas Meharosos Chusa Meachnosas Orchim. He was able to absorb a little bit of the, I call it the reflected image, like the moon, you know, reflects the light of the sun, of the great luminary of Avraham Avinu, who is an intense Hachnosis Orchim. So basically, if you ask the question, let's go back to the Levush, and the Levush says that we make the bracha of what's in the Nusach HaBracha again, Baruch Ato Hashem El Kemech Zocher Es HaTzadikim. And we ask the question, well, how could it possibly be that the Levush was unaware of the evil nature and status of Lot? Rashi says it over and over again, even Afinart, on the place in the Gemara in Brachas, where the Gemara formulates this Bracha. How could the Levush have messed up? And the answer is, the Levush didn't mess up at all. He's very much aware of the fact that Lot is a Rasha. On the contrary, he's asking himself, so why was Lot spared and saved from the decree against Sodom if he was a Rasha as well? And the answer is, because he had some element of a tzaddik. What element of a tzaddik was he able to pick up, so to speak, and imitate, even on a smaller, you know, bezeir anfin in a microcosm? It was the element of hachnosokim from Avraham Avinu. And now we begin to understand that inside Lot, there is some potential, if you will, something that's munach, that's tamun, that's hidden in the deep in the souls of Lot, in the soul of Lot, and that's the koach of Avraham Avinu, is somehow embedded deep below the surface into the soul of Lot, that it comes forward in the case where Lot accepted the malachim, as we saw in Reb Tzadik. And now we understand why Zochar HaTzadikim means we're thanking Hashem for the great miracle he performed on behalf of Lot, despite the fact that Lot is a Rasha. But Lot has this one inherent koach of tzidkus that he took from Avram, his uncle, namely Hachnosis Orchim. And as far as Lot is concerned, he himself, independently, only has a little bit of that tzchus, but the great tzchus of his uncle Avram, who's the source and the teacher of Achnosis Orachim, is going to impact on Lot, so that Lot picks up a little bit of this. And now we understand why the bracha is written in the Hebrew grammatical plural tzaddikim, because on the one hand, we're blessing Hashem for having spared Lot who didn't deserve to be spared, but nevertheless, because he had a little bit of the hachnasas orchim, we can call him a miktas tzidkus. He's got some element, he's not a tzaddik, but he has some element of tzidkus which reflected itself in his hachnasas orchim. On the same token, we have to thank Hashem for the reason why Lot was spared. And if we go back to the source, what's the source of Lot being spared? Avraham Avinu. So Avraham Avinu is the tzaddik that will teach Hachnosis Orchim, and therefore Avraham Avinu also fundamentally has to be mentioned in this bracha. So we're going to thank Hashem for Zocher Es HaTzadikim, to remember now, first of all, Avraham Avinu and his great midah of Chesed and Hachnosis Orchim, and next, to remember the second low-case tzaddik, meaning the relative tzaddik. And relative has two meanings here. Relative to the episode of Hachnosis Orchim, and relative because he's a relative of Avraham Avinu, and he is spared too miraculously only in that skus of whatever Hachnosis Orchim he had. But Rabbosai, as we close, the message I want you to take away from this shiur, and it's absolutely phenomenal the way the words and the letters and the gemaras work out, and how we can justify the levush against the attack of the Eliyahu Rabbah. That's all wonderful. But you know what? I would be meichel you if you forgot all of that, because we have limited memories. But I won't be meichel you if you forget the following yesod ha-yesodos, that the introduction to the Torah, the foundation upon which the entire Torah is predicated, is midos tovos, to feel for the next one, to have compassion for the poor people, for the destitute. Stone is destroyed because they personify midos rovs. Forget about the Zion Mrs. Beninok. We're not talking about legislation. We're talking about something that predates legislation. It's so fundamental. It's not even in the official canon of the Zion Mrs. Beninok, because to have such cruelty against the Aniyim and to punish those who extended compassion against Aniyim, that's destruction. That is the opposite of Olam Chesed Yibon. And for that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no rachmanis, as Yechezkel Novi formulates it, Yad Ani V'Evyon Lo Echziku. That cruelty is so embedded in stone that it means to destroy stone. That's the Gzar Din. And when we look at the world today, we should look at it from this perspective, with these spectacles on our eyes. What is the world coming to today? Have we gotten to the point where most of the nations of the world are just simply interested in themselves, and even within themselves, one to the other, no sense of compassion? I don't know. I don't want to be cynical, but it doesn't look great. There are people who are starving left, right, and center, and they're killing each other. Killing each other within the same nation. And how could it be? Where is the midos tovos that God bestowed upon them? So Mirtz Hashem, if we learn from them what not to do, and on the contrary, we learn the midos tovos of an Avraham Avinu, of Olam HaChesed Yibonu, we can build a world, and we can establish a world that's predicated on goodness, on compassion, one for the other. Kein Yiratzon.
It sounds like your earlier
shiur,
He did the Maisa Mitzvah of
Because the Ahavtal Recha Koch means you have to have a lev also, you know, Rachman Oliva boy. So the Maisa Mitzvah is meaningful in itself, but it has to have a Kiyum. For Ben Yon is adding another piece here, because he's saying that if you actually gave the coin at the end of the day, for whatever reason that motivated you, you get some level. And according to one Tani, you're me the Beinonis. So you're Yotze Mechlal Stum. But if it's real pure cruelty, and you do it anyway, because and you hate what you're doing, it's repulsive. Well, that I think, according to everybody, is Midas Stum. Okay then? So as I said at the outset, this shiur was not so much a parsha shiur, but I thought it was very important to learn this as Hashkafa shiur. I hope you got something out of it.
Very much. Yeah. Who is Zeresh?
Zeresh was the